Every Thursday in the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour, we catch up with Zach Osterman, the beat writer for Indiana Everything at theindystar.com, at Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse. And you've been busy here the last couple days. We have not. So when did we talk? We talked last week a little bit. We got you a little bit last week as you were busy running around doing stuff. You got a busy weekend this weekend. We appreciate you coming in to spend some time with us today. And you were busy last night as the Huber Farms annual, what does that mean? That summer's really here for Indiana Athletics?
I think it is it always feels like kind of the
goodbye, we'll be back later.
The final turning of the page of the previous year, and sometimes baseball's still going on as it is now, and you know, you might have some of the individual sports like golf and track and field, you know, picking up little bits and pieces. But you know, Huber's always where you ask the coaches about the freshmen coming in, and you know, everybody's about to report to campus, and it feels like the sort of official start of IU sports summer in a lot of ways.
And last night at Huber Farms, they had, what, over 1,000 people like they always do. But this year was a little bit different as the college landscape changes on almost a daily basis. But this year, this was an NIL Hoosiers for Good event, and for people who haven't been following along, that means that, well, in the old days they would sell tickets there, but now a portion of them goes literally to the student-athlete, and how that helps out. Was the crowd different? Did they have more room? Does NIL matter? What did you see last night before we get into what the coaches said?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't feel that different, and I only had a peek into the big room. I'm past the days of feeling like I need to live tweet what the coaches say at the dinner, but, you know, I think – I don't know how much it changed. I do think, you know, and this is probably more just like my just sort of thinking out loud than it is anything else. It does feel to me like the whole sort of like this is how the sausage is made in NIL is not quite as interesting to people as maybe it was at the beginning. I also think events like this, you know, there was a time when, you know, one of the big appeals of Huber is if you think about Indiana's sort of donor base, the heart of Indiana's booster base in athletics runs Indianapolis to Louisville and I-65, and there's in various pockets, Columbus and Bloomington, obviously, and Seymour, and you know, you go down to Jeffersonville and New Albany in that area, and then obviously Louisville itself. This is a chance to be down around. You do tons of stuff in Indy. You play basketball games in Indy. You play football games in Indy. You have reunions in Indy. This is a chance to get with your Southern Indiana base, your Louisville base, and everyone just kind of in that area along the Ohio. And I think there was a time, this has been a big event on the athletics sort of fundraising schedule for a very long time, longer than I've been around. And I think there was a time where, you know, just to be frank, the money it made a bigger dent in the athletics department budget. And so it was
before TV contracts, before
all
that. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. And so not that this was paying for, you know, the
North end zone or right.
Yeah, but it was when the budgets were smaller, this was a bigger piece of it. And it was also a chance to engage with your donors in a way that, you know, get them in a room, pitch them on something. Well, now you can do that on Zoom. Now you can do that on a
John
video
Laskowski would tell me the days when he was on TV, you know, he would go, they'd have one in Huber Farms and they'd have one in Evansville, then one in Vincennes and one in Kokomo, one in Fort Wayne, one in
always.
Elkhart.
Yeah, it was called like the Hoosier Tailgate Tour, yeah. I think is what it was called.
Now, that was with Fred. I remember then they went to just South Bend, Indy. There was like three or four stops.
Yeah, they've stopped doing
it. Just used to be
they
like
would map
the
out.
Tour.
They would say, these are the places we're going to be. These are the coaches that are going to be at these places.
Yeah.
It always seemed like Tracy wanted to go down to Evansville. I think he recruited that area, you know, pretty well. He always wanted to be down there. It has been scaled back, and I guess what I'm trying to say here is it probably has more benefit as an NIL fundraiser now than maybe where it would hit the department. If the because, you know, athletics directors like Scott Dolson across the country are having to strike this balance of where do I'm going to have to let some money go because I'm not going to ask my boosters for twice the amount of money I was already asking them to send some to NIL but some to me and not cut at all. Where can I let some go and support these efforts now that I'm allowed to have this much more sort of one-to-one interaction with the collectives without hitting my department? Well, guess what? Scott Dolson's still there. Mike Woodson's still there. Tom Allen's still there. All the fundraising staff are still there. It's a Hoosiers for Good event. You can still grip and grin with the donors that you might want to pay for whatever. I mean, like, I don't think I'm going to shock anybody. Like Ned Fow was there last night. Ned Fow's always there. He's
yeah, right.
Yeah, he lives
his
down
name's
around
on everything.
His name is, or he lives down around Louisville. He's always at this event. He paid, you know, golf course, the courts at Cook Hall, all these different things. Well, that's a chance to sit down with Ned Fow. And okay, the money from the night goes to Hoosiers for good, but that doesn't mean that you, as Scott Dolson, have lost the opportunity to just chat with him about, this is the next thing I have in mind. You know, what would you like to see, and how could we keep you engaged on it? And so, again, the nature of these things changes, and you bring up something really relevant, which is they used to do a ton of these. Now, really, they only do one or two a summer. Like the tailgate tour, as recently as like 10 years ago, was a huge deal. It was like, like you said, it was like South Bend, Fort Wayne, Indy.
It was at Lucas Oil Stadium when it opened, right?
Yeah, they held it at Lucas Oil
like
for
the,
a while.
In the lobby up there.
Yeah. You know,
showing
Huber, Evansville, Jasper. They would do one in Jasper.
I think I said Vincennes. I think I meant Jasper.
Yeah.
But
and so,
anyhow, Southwest Indiana.
Yeah, and so it's just like it has been scaled back because ultimately some of this stuff you can achieve now in a much more direct way. But the dinner itself, shifting it to benefit NIL, that makes a bigger deal, you know, when, again, when.
And tickets aren't $25 to this either.
No,
that's the other thing
I forget
remember.
Exactly what it is, but I mean, I think you're talking like $1,000 a table, something like
right.
that.
Right, and then if you play more. Golf, you add on a little bit more to that.
And there's an auction.
And there's a
And again, and you're in the right. room and you say, you know, you're putting all your big donors in the room with your official collective. And so some of them probably were already engaged, but now those people can have the conversation about what can we do for you? How can we strengthen this relationship going into the next academic year? And, you know, this is, let's talk about some of the things. Because, you know, the NIL collective may not publicize what each individual athlete's getting, but it can certainly say that that's not privileged information. They just choose not to publish it.
Correct.
So you can certainly sit down and say, well, you know, in year one, we were able to put out this amount of money to these amount of athletes, and these were this is roughly the way we broke this down. Year two, because of your support, we were able to do this. Now we're thinking about year three, you know, how can we strengthen this relationship between you and us? So there's the hard money part of it, and then there's the soft money part of it. But
you we know, are family.
Going back to when it going back to sort of, you know, where is the benefit felt more? Well, if you're an NIL collective, I'm just making this up, but let's say let's just say you've got 10 million either cash on hand or committed, you know, at any given moment.
A nice
you,
round number.
You, yeah, I'm just making this up, but let's just say you've got 10 million either cash on hand or committed currently to athletes in a variety of deals. Well, a night where a booster dinner might make you a few $100,000, that goes a much longer way than a department that's running a $100+ million.
It almost sounds like political fundraising to a degree, where you have like, yeah, the big dinner and you buy a table and you want access and you want to shake hands and you want to be close and you want to have your voice heard.
And Coach,
about
while
it.
We're here, we need you to talk to him because he's a key
absolutely
piece of what we're trying to do
right.
the next time. Yeah.
And that's what makes it exciting, because you do see the people that care. You do see, and the athletes that care. I saw Xavier Johnson shot some, had a stand up with you guys as well. Were there any other athletes there? Because I know that's another angle to this that people really enjoy. I mean, coaches. Great. Coach does a lot of coach speak as well, but we always love to see Romeo Langford or Trace Jackson Davis or whoever. Now you got to pay to do it, and that's okay, because that's how the landscape is, and all it does is make your program stronger, and everybody else is doing it. So anybody else besides Xavier Johnson there, and if not, why not?
Jalen Lucas was. There were a few football players there. The other person that did sort of like a public appearance was Jalen Lucas.
Okay, makes sense. He's going to be the face of football.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the faces of the football program this season.
Now we don't. Really.
And in the past, it's not like the athletes were only there because of NIL. There have been athletes at some of these things in the past, and some of it also just depends on who's in town. Like, again, this is the time of year where a lot of, other than the programs that are still competing, you've really sent most of your athletes home.
I saw Ja'Kai Newton just arrived.
Yeah, and some of them will be getting to campus around this time. Some of them will be, scheduled to arrive in the next week or two. But this is the one time, you know, it's the way you sort of think about it is basically like fall sports plus basketball show up in early mid June, and that's when their off season starts. And then, you know, a lot of your other winter sports probably won't start filtering in until either late summer or the fall semester. And then obviously, like, your baseballs and your softballs and the ones that go deep into the spring, they'll have the summer off. Now, obviously, a baseball player might go play summer ball, but he won't be doing anything at school if he doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
So some of it also is just who's around, essentially. But Xavier Johnson's 23 years old. You can understand why he might just rather be in Bloomington. He's got access to all the facilities. You know, you're going to go home and stay with your parents for 3 weeks when you're 23.
No.
I can understand. I'd probably rather be in Bloomington. Or maybe I can.
Have you ever been in Bloomington in the summer? You'd rather be in Bloomington.
Well,
in the
summer. Also, hey, you've got, you know, maybe you can hop a plane and go out to L.A. and work out with Jalen Huccifino and Trayce Jackson-Davis for a couple days. And then you're in L.A. and you can hang out with your friends and whatever else. But the point is, it just kind of depends a little bit on who's in town sometimes, too. Now, maybe things are different now because of NIL. You can build in something that says, hey, you know, into these NIL contracts, it says, hey, Huber's a big deal for us.
Yes. So if you want to be a part of this, we need you here.
We're going to need you to commit to these kinds of speaking engagements. We're picking this up now. This did X $100,000 in direct fundraising for us last year. So we're going to need you to go ahead and step in and you know, and
the other side of that NIL agreement could also be, you know, you get a couple plane tickets to go where you need to go this summer to go work out with Trayce and Jalen Huccifino. And that's the other side of it. Everyone should benefit from this, right? It shouldn't be a one-way deal.
And like as an athlete, why wouldn't you want to be in if you want to build an NIL profile? Well,
you can't do it sitting at home under the covers.
Yeah, here are business owners, you know, people with commercial interests who also
have a lot of money to spend.
Yeah, who are also, you know, interested in building relationships with IU athletes. Well, that's a great place for you to be.
Absolutely.
For somebody to shove a couple business cards in your pocket. So
last night, the NIL Hoosiers for Good event at Huber Farms. Huber's been doing this forever. I can't remember how long it's been, but I know it's been a while.
Yes. I mean, again, it predates me substantially.
And you're getting up there.
So.
But here's the thing. We get everybody together. We have the, you know, play the fight song. Let's have a little rah-rah time. Let's talk about what's going on. And this is the first time since when. I would guess the spring football Saturday for Tom Allen, and I couldn't tell you the last time I remember Mike Woodson addressing you guys. So what did we learn last night from? Let's start with, basketball, because it ended last, and the draft pullout was yesterday. The deadline was midnight. I thought it was funny Xavier Johnson tweeting at Trayce Jackson-Davis. Bro, you know, it's not 11:59 yet. But Trayce is not coming back. What did we learn from the round ball side of things? You have a roster spot that is open. I know that was that question was obviously asked. And how pleased is Indiana to be back in the eye of the hurricane in national recruiting?
Yeah, I mean, this is also, just if anybody's interested in how the sausage is made, this is very much kind of a just sort of a catch-all event from a media perspective in terms of being able to ask just any number of, you talked about the scholarship issue. One thing that didn't come up last night that often comes up, in part because of location, is when's the Kentucky game going to get back on the schedule? And I think maybe part of the reason it also didn't come up was because
We
have a bit of an answer on it now, whereas in the past it was like this vague thing that was out there. We also know more about the future schedules and things, so there's not like, when are you going to play Louisville? Well, guess what? Indiana-Louisville, maybe they meet in the Empire Classic next year. Maybe they don't.
Yeah, we'll play football in a couple of months, so relax
on that.
The point is,
you get the idea. It's just a catch-all of like, when's everybody going to get to campus? How's recruiting been going? What are you going to do in the offseason? Blah, 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 blah. Like I said, it's a really good just sort of like primer for the restart. You know, it's a new season. Once these kids show up, for basketball as an example, it's a new roster. These kids show up and, you know, you officially tear down the Jackson Davis 23 nameplate. The Thompson 25 nameplate. So that number belongs to somebody else now. And you are no longer thinking at all about last season, about where a guy might land in the draft. Maybe he'll come. Maybe he'll stay in. Maybe he'll come out. You know, what do we need out of the portal? This, that. Your roster is mostly, if not fully complete by this time. By this time last year, it was. Indiana had 13 scholarships accounted for. So it's very much just kind of a sort of like the calendar is turning over. You know, this is the beginning, effectively, of the 23-24 season. Athletically speaking, again, not accounting for a program like baseball that's still playing, but most programs are done. Most seasons are over. The academic year athletically is all but complete. not counting a baseball in the postseason. So it's much more that turning of the page to start thinking about 2023-2024. And that's what you wind up asking a lot about. Tom Allen, we talked a lot about quarterbacks, about adapting transfers in, about all these different things. With Mike Woodson, it was, what are you going to be emphasizing in offseason workouts? What are you going to be trying to do? Are you going to fill that 13th spot? Yeah, we'll see. We're going to see kind of what falls through the cracks after the NBA draft. Something else might pop up for us. But, you know, we've also got a lot of work to do on the floor. And so it's just kind of like that. It really is just, like I said, it's just a way of sort of priming the pump for, hey, we're all turning our attention, you know, kind of forward now. And all the loose ends of last season are pretty much tied up. And in football, spring practice is over. The roster is mostly full. There's always one or two spots open, but the roster is basically set. You're not, it's unlikely Indiana's going to add, you know, Javon Curse to its pass rush between now and August 1. Well,
because that guy's just not there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's much more about just sort of turning forward and talking to Mike Woodson again about, like, oh, you know, it's our first chance to talk to Mike Woodson since Mackenzie Mbako committed. It's our first chance to talk to Mike Woodson about Khalil Ware, about just the idea of remaking the roster and what's going to be different without Trace. And not in a, like, hey, Mike, I know you just lost to Miami, but as you cast your mind forward to next season, you know, what are you thinking? But more in a, he's had time to process it. He's had time to kind of put it away. He's had time to obviously refill the roster with different players and start formulating in his own mind a kind of a grand plan of what he wants his next team to be. And then you ask him about it. So what'd
he tell you?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, no coach is ever going to come to these settings and be like, boy, I don't know. Like, yeah. You know, it's
– Well, the interesting part of this is I thought – not the interesting part is, but to a degree it was interesting that Indiana was a player in the portal market and in the recruiting game. The late signing of Mackenzie Mbako is something. We saw that kind of with Tamar Bates. I don't want to make that comparison of what the results are going to be. That's not where I'm going with this. But you've seen this Indiana Hoosiers factor in two different factions. That has to be encouraging because not everything works out perfectly in college basketball recruiting.
No, and there's also the extent to which, like, I mean, I think Indiana planned for that. Like, I think Indiana knew.
But you can't plan to get Mbako. You can't plan that Ware is going to choose you. But that's happening is my point.
But what you can plan for is that the environment is going to exist where there's a lot more of those opportunities. And we've talked about this in a more micro way just through the spring. You can plan for the idea that the environment is going to exist where your plan for 2023-2024, 12 months out, you know, this time a year ago when Mike Woodson and his staff are sitting down and making recruiting plans and saying, you know, we know that Trace Jackson Davis, Trace has told us this is it. This is his last year. We know it's Miller's last year. We know it's Race's last year. At the time, you would have said, Xavier, we know it's Xavier's last year. And then you get somewhere into the summer and Mike Woodson looks around and is like, you know, I've coached some NBA guards and goal number one there is probably an NBA guard. I don't know that we can count on him being a part of the long-term solution here. I think, you know, at some point I'm sure it had to dawn on him that you know, Jalen Hood-Schifino had the potential to be one and done. My point is, when you start making these plans 6, 8, 9, 12 months out, you know, there used to be a time where you would have said, we need a lot of roster surety by the end of the first signing window. Because we can't wind up in a situation like where Kentucky is right now, where they got 7 scholarship players committed for next season. Kentucky's a bit of an extreme example, I recognize. but the flip side is, and this is, you know, Kentucky is where it can go wrong. I'm not saying it's a foolproof plan, but the flip side of it is you can sit there in your office, if you're Mike Woodson, a year ago and say, what we're going to do is rebuild with the portal. And then we're also going to look at some, you know, we know some good high school players will come open. And we're going to, you know, we did that with Tamar Bates. We did it with Malik Renew. Mackenzie Mbako, obviously, on another level.
Oh, I forgot about Renew. Good job.
But still, the point is, we know how to do that. We know how to make those recruitments that move fast. We know how to sell our image, to convince kids, to build those relationships, and get them in the door kind of late in the process. But the point is, you know, with the portal, with the one-year transfer exemption, with NIL, there's more opportunity. And frankly, even with some of the freedom of movement around the draft, you can get more intensive in the NBA draft process and still come back out again compared to where you could 10 years ago. There's much more opportunity to build a roster in the spring than there kind of used to be. And so I think that the other part of this is it's not – if Indiana had kind of gone into the off season as was on March 19th or whatever day it was they lost to Miami. And the whole plan had been to rebuild it in the spring. 5-10 years ago, you would have said this reeks of desperation.
Correct.
But now, that's just part of the field. And you can say in October, what we're going to do in March is we're going to go get 5 transfers and a freshman, because you know those players will be there, and you've just got to do a good job recruiting them. And you know that that talent pool will support that as a viable path back to competitiveness.
And I think that's my poorly worded question. The talent they've gotten out of this has to be – there's talent in there. But at the level of Ware and Mbako, there's no guarantee that could happen. So they should be pleased as punch. Now we know that Ware is going to go try out for what, the U19 national team. He's part of a pool of 35 players there. Mbako is coming to campus, and that's great. That one scholarship that's left, now that everybody's had to pull out of the draft, is that – I saw a kid from Dayton's name pop up last night.
Mongolian Mike. He's the first Mongolian Division I player.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's not a
I can't pronounce his last
that's
name.
That's not a pejorative. That's a fact.
No, that's what everyone calls him, Mongolian Mike. He played at Dayton. That's why I don't know how serious that is from either side, but I had heard for a while Indiana was at least involved there. But again, I think Indiana might also want to know – you know, who filters out of the draft. Because remember, the transfer portal window is closed unless you are a grad transfer. So there's players that may not have entered the portal before they went into the draft.
They have to go back to where they started?
That now they don't have to. If they can grad transfer, they can enter the portal.
Okay,
now.
Let me rephrase that. I'm a sophomore at Akron.
You cannot graduate.
I cannot graduate.
You have to go back to Akron.
So that's okay, that's why I want to make sure people clear.
You're a junior at Akron. Who graduated in 3 years.
I can go.
You can go back to Akron if you'd like, or if as long as you can satisfy all the requirements of a grad transfer, you can enter the portal. Was it May 11th? That portal deadline did not apply to grad transfers. There are no deadlines for grad transfers.
They have full carte blanche.
Yes. So okay. So there will be a small handful of players that might come that might withdraw from the draft, but still go in the portal at some point. And listen, the other thing is, you don't need to fill that 12th spot or that 13th spot. Indiana's got its fingers in a lot of pies in 2024. It's proven it can recruit well out of the portal.
And the other thing you need to remember, you don't play 13 players during the season.
No. So the question is basically just how comfortable are you with the back end of, you know, the let's say the...
If everybody gets hurt, it doesn't matter if the 13th guy's playing. Yeah. I'll say it. You don't have to.
Well, but the other part of it is, how do you feel about the development of a CJ Gunn, of a Caleb Banks? How do you feel about your two freshmen? Gabe Cupp's a lot of pedigree as a point guard, probably needs to gain some weight. Maybe you want to see him go through the summer, see how much stronger he can get, how much more comfortable he can get with the pace of the college game. You know, Ja'Kai Newton is a player I like a lot, but he also spent a lot of last season dealing with a knee injury.
And he's recovering from it.
He's
right?
Healthy and full go now, but you want to make sure. You know, you don't want to say, like, part of the plan is to give this kid that missed a lot of his senior season with a knee problem 25 minutes a game.
Yeah.
You want to make sure he can handle it because he's a freshman and he's coming off an injury and all those sorts of things. So there's always risk involved at the back end of your roster. But I think, you know, where Mike Woodson and his staff are is the ability to be a little bit selective with that last spot. And not just think, well, we just got.
And you're not used.
We got to throw it at the first thing that pops up.
And as you mentioned, you're not forced to use and fill all 13 spots either. Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joining us here on the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour, as he does every Thursday. We'll take a timeout to let him get his coffee refilled, catch his breath, and we'll come back and talk more on the hoops side of things. Why? Well, that the Big Ten is going to get bigger as people are coming back. Time out quickly. We're back with more of the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour next. All right, welcome back to the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour here on a Thursday afternoon, the first day of June. Rabbit, and all that fun stuff. I had my buddy on yesterday, Ben Everill from PGAtour.com and GolfBet, and we were breaking down the field over at Jack's tournament at the Memorial, and he heard the Crazy Horse Tavern commercial while he's waiting. He goes, he's from Australia. He goes, mate, what's Hoosier hash? And I'm like, no, it's not that. It's a breakfast food, and it's delicious. And he said, good. I was worried there for a minute, but Ben did a great job. You can go back and listen to our interview and get you ready for, the end of round one and see what's happening on the weekend. Good stuff from Benny. We'll try to get the tour covered more than we have in the past. More golf as well. Tomorrow we'll talk to Sultan's Run. Chris Treader will join us in the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Osterman is here today. That's what's most important. The big Huber Farms Media Extravaganza. Well, technically it was a fundraiser for the Hoosiers for Good NIL, but we did get some good information. Talking basketball today. Maybe we'll get into the hoops a little bit for tomorrow. But basketball, here's the point. All right, you've got a scholarship left. You've got all these pieces falling back and forth. Where does Indiana stand heading back into a Big Ten? That's going to welcome back Zach Edey. He announced he is returning to school. Terrence Shannon and Coleman Hawkins are returning to Illinois. That's interesting because a lot of guys, including yourself, had Illinois on the top of the heap at this time last year based on who was coming back and what was going on. What are your early, again, whiteboard or chalkboard, erasable looks at all of this and how Indiana will line up in the Big Ten moving forward?
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, there's there's both the players or the teams that this has been good for, this little stretch. I mean, Purdue is an obvious one, getting Zach Edey back. I was a little surprised to see both Coleman Hawkins and Terrence Shannon back. I felt like at least one of those guys, just on the sort of the law of large numbers, was bound to stay in the draft, and it seemed like both were you know, well thought of enough at least to maybe count on getting drafted. You know, maybe they have to go to a second round or something like that, but I thought they'd at least potentially get drafted. So it's obviously been good for those teams. The flip side is you look at a Michigan, for example. Michigan had a pretty rough spring, you know, lost some players, lost some recruits, didn't replace them, et cetera, and so forth.
Tried to with Caleb Love, and that fell apart underneath. We talked about that last week. Love is now at Arizona, for those of you not following along. That's good news for the rest of the Big Ten.
I assume Paul Mulcahy pulled out.
I haven't seen that. Now we're
look it up.
We're taping this around lunchtime on earlier today, Thursday. But no, late last night, Goodman had a tweet out with like four or five guys, and Mulcahy was still on his list of hadn't seen it. And I gave up about 11:45. I did not wait till the absolute deadline. I don't know if Goodman's up that late. I don't know where he is this time of year. If he's in Boston, I don't know. Maybe not.
It looks like we still don't know, which is
bizarre. Is interesting because.
But like Rutgers lost Cam Spencer,
transfer
portal.
Yeah.
Rutgers, I think, lost a recruit for next season. I don't know what.
But Rutgers has a top three player coming in next.
They do.
Year. Ace
they
Bailey, do. Who's also going to be at that under 19 USA Team USA training camp with Kalel Ware.
Cliff Amore is back as well.
That will help.
That obviously sort of strengthens them. It still feels like I think Indiana is in a place where, as things stand, you would think they should be competitive in the Big Ten. They should, you know, at a minimum see the NCAA tournament as a starting point. I think the question you have with Indiana is just where the upside is for a lot of guys. Like, Kalel Ware is a great example. Obviously, McKenzie Mbako, you know, to some extent, a player like Malik Renu. I think there are a lot of people that worry about Malik Renu defensively. I think you'd be surprised at how many fouls he committed last year that were just the freshman trying to do things he shouldn't foul.
Just a step late.
The reaching, right. Well, the reaching for a rebound he's never going to get. The trying for a steal 80 feet from the basket.
The bump.
The stuff that it's just sort of like you'll learn not to do that as a sophomore when suddenly – when you've had an off season, you've watched a lot of film, and you're a little more athletic, and you know, frankly, your coach looks at you and says, "Malik, you just can't do that because we need you to play more.
We can't play
35 minutes of Trayce Jackson-Davis a night."
The key is that
Trey Galloway. You know, can Trey Galloway step up his volume but retain some? You know, at least a measure of the efficiency he showed last year, particularly from behind the 3-point line. Can you get one of Caleb Banks or C.J. Gunn to step into maybe just the scoring volume and efficiency that Trey Galloway showed last year? And so the point I'm trying to make is I think Indiana is probably one of the higher potential teams in the league. And I think that if we fast forward, let's assume Indiana does nothing else. Let's assume they add no one else. If we fast forward to, you know, this conversation in late August, early September, when we're all starting to sort of formulate our preseason predictions and how does this team fit and where do they go and all that. I think Indiana is a team that a lot of people are intrigued by. And maybe, you know, maybe we sort of say, who's your dark horse? Could be Indiana, because, boy, there's a lot of talent there. And, yeah, they got a lot to figure out, but you still got a fourth-year point guard or a sixth-year point guard. You still got a fourth-year combo guard next to him. You've still got a five-star prospect starting at the three. You've still got a relatively proven sort of power forward to step into those Trace Jackson Davis minutes, those Race Thompson minutes, and Malik Renew. The point is there's enough of a base for what Indiana's got that they have the room to develop, and they might be a little bit rocky. Maybe, you know, maybe Auburn, you know, tunes them up a little bit because they're just a little young, but by February, what do they look like? But I suspect Indiana's more one of those teams that you wind up sort of sitting somewhere in the middle of the conference and sort of saying, if there's a team with upside, if there's a team that
veteran
can,
guards will push you that way, won't they?
Yeah, and having, listen, there's no substitute. I mean, you and I both know this, for having proven point guard play. You can have all the experience in the world. You can have all
the Purdue, right?
Yeah, all the veteran whatever in the world. And I know Xavier Johnson sometimes can do things that make you scratch your head, but more often than not, he's making the right plays, the right decisions, the right passes, the right shots, whatever. And if
you
suddenly,
never have to question his whether he's in shape. You never have to question his go-get-it-ness. You never have to question any of that. The only thing you question is, does he go too fast sometimes? And we don't need that shot.
And if all of a sudden you are surrounding him with a more athletic team,
he will get more wide-open drives and more space to navigate, which is great. The one question that everybody asks me, and I say, you know, when I see Osterman, I will make sure I ask him that. Why is it so hard for Indiana University to find a knockdown shooter? Why is that so hard? Are there not that many knockdown shooters, or are they so in demand and there's so few of them, the pick of the litter schools, and we're trying to get our way back into that, as Mike was talking about last night, trying to force our way back into there. But simply, we can't find someone just to be able to play a little defense and knock down a few shots.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think there's an extent to which, like, that's just that's
because we're all building our perfect fantasy basketball roster, and we need a shooter on the wing.
Yeah, and that, right, and that's part of it. Everybody needs it, especially like in the portal.
Why wouldn't you want a shooter? Exactly.
Yeah,
it's not like they're saying no, we don't want any more of these. Why can't we get them?
You know, I mean, listen, I also think, I mean, Mike Woodson can talk about spreading the floor. I don't think Mike Woodson is ever going to intentionally build a team that just plays four out, shoots the ball all over the place, leads the nation in 3-point attempts. I think he's always going to want some of the length and versatility that comes with playing a little bit bigger. That doesn't mean two out and out forwards. You know, he's, right. He's been pretty clear about, I'd never coached a player like Trace. I'd never built an offense around going, you know, so heavy on back to the basket offense. We're going to do some things differently. And, you know, I think what he said last night is stuff that maybe feels a little bit more familiar to me from my time with the Knicks and my time with the Hawks. But having said that, listen, Indiana needs some 3-point shooting, or it's going to be hard to get the best out of this roster. Now, you know, you can look, I mean, McKenzie Mbako's got some reputation as a good shooter. If he can come in and prove some knockdown ability early on, that helps. If, you know, somebody asked in a mailbag I did recently, somebody asked about, you know, just sort of like basically, you know, is there precedent for bad shooters becoming good shooters overnight? And I said, really, not at volume. No. But what there is precedent for is for a bad shooter to become a good shooter in limited volume,
Trey Galloway's done. Show you, right.
And there's also precedent for a bad shooter to become a good shooter in limited volume 1 year and then to stay an effective shooter. Maybe not. I think he shot about 47% from three. Let's assume if you give him twice the attempts, that retreats to 38 or 39%.
That's still good.
Yeah. And it's on twice the attempts. So I think what you're hoping is, if you don't add somebody else, that like CJ Gunn, who I think is 2 of 24 from 3 last season,
he'll be fine.
But you can see the mechanics and you know the reputation. He can get to a place where he's taking 1.5 to 2 threes a game, or maybe it's Caleb Banks, or maybe it's Kai Newton, or whoever. Yeah. And they make 37%. He makes 37% of them. And then Trey Galloway doubles his 3-point attempts and stays north of 36%. And that's where I think it's more realistic to sort of expect progress from within.
Safety in numbers as opposed to
and
that.
I would also say, some
other guys that are
Xavier
shooters.
Xavier Johnson is a 36.5% 3-point shooter since he got to Indiana. And that includes really being very average at it basically his first 2.5 months.
To your point, though, the more space and this happens, Xavier will have more space and will not need to take forced or contested ones. And most of these guys that are open should be able to hit 4 out of 10 when they're open. I'm talking wide, not pull up somebody hand in your face. When the ball swings and you're standing on the top of the key and no one's around you, you should be able to step into it and shoot it.
And even if Kalel Ware only shoots 25% on maybe 60 attempts, well, that's 60 attempts and whatever that is, like 16 makes, 18 makes. You didn't get out of your five last year. So suddenly teams have to defend that differently. Suddenly you've got legitimate pick and pop. You know, we saw Indiana use Trace Jackson Davis in a lot of short roll situations, but that was usually short roll to draw somebody away from the basket so Trace Jackson Davis could pass the ball down low for an easy basket for Race Thompson or Miller Kopp on the cut or whatever. This would be genuine, more like pick and pop, like, hey, Zach Edey's got to go out to the three-point line to defend Kalel Ware, because Kalel Ware has got a little bit of, you know, sophomore year Hunter Dickinson in him, where, no, he's not going to hit a ton of threes, but if you leave him alone and he gets comfortable, he'll hit 4 in a game. And suddenly, their 5 just scored 12 points from behind the three-point line and blew up your game plan. And, again, it's one of those where it can be a little bit dangerous to try and improve something like shooting efficiency on the margins. It can be dangerous to sort of say, well, we're just going to get a little bit more from everybody, rather than just going out and saying, we got Miller Kopp. He shoots 36% from three. He'll shoot 140 of them this year, and there's a three-point shooter. But the flip side is, it's not a long road to travel to get at least some of that, to get Kalel Ware shooting 30% from three. And that's not a great number, but it's a great number for a five.
Right.
And if Malik Reneau can make a few threes, because like his shot doesn't look bad. He made a couple last year. He had some 15-footers. The form looks good. Then suddenly your 4 and your 5 can both operate away from the basket enough that Xavier, you talk about driving lanes, Xavier Johnson can go to the rim because the shot blocker isn't just standing there with his hands up, because Kalel Ware just ran out to the corner or the wing, and Zach Edey knows he can't just stand there, because if he does, Kalel Ware gets a wide open 3.
And 3 and is your more point, than 2.
Yes, and to your point, Kalel Ware may only hit 28% of his threes, but I bet he hits 40% of his open threes. And you can't allow him the wide open one.
And Xavier Johnson will make 100% of his layups not being contested either.
And he'll see that pass once he knows he can trust
him to make it.
Yeah.
The other side of this is interesting, and I know you kept track of this to a degree over the last couple of years, and I don't need the exact fact. I just want you to be in the ballpark here to illustrate the point. Indiana didn't make double-digit threes very often.
They didn't even – I mean, to some extent, they didn't even take double-digit threes very often.
Four of 11.
I don't remember what the exact number was, but, I mean, they stopped shooting threes at, like, genuine volume basically around the turn of the year.
And you can't win in volume doing that,
no.
I don't believe. You had one of the greatest players within 6 feet of the basket in recent history. And you struggled at times. And that's not a knock on Trace Jackson Davis. No one's knocking Trace Jackson Davis ever because of his numbers. But what it did, when you're down 12 or 14 and you got to kick it in there and they don't go in, that's tough. That's tough to do. So I think it makes your point to say, hey, look, if we can get 6-7 guys shooting 1 or 2 a game, okay, well, that gets us to 14. And just start there, because you have to shoot them. You can't. I don't think you can be
and
successful
if you
don't
shoot.
And if you
have more guys that...
Yeah, it's more. Then you're not keying on one
guy.
If
you have more guys that have to be followed to the perimeter,
yeah,
because they'll
space,
make 40
baby,
to 50% of the open ones, then you don't need the one guy, the Nick Zeisloff, that makes 47%. And you just can't lose him. So that's a guy that can't help ever anywhere. His defender can never help anywhere at all, because he can make a 3 from anywhere. You'd love to have that player. Everybody would.
That's the guy we're
and
trying
Indiana
to put on
would,
that roster.
And would probably
right?
be better if they had Nick Zeisloff on their roster for next season. But the flip side is, if you can get to a place where, again, to your point about open threes, Kalel Ware, Mackenzie Mbako, Xavier Johnson, Trey Galloway, CJ Gunn, Caleb Banks can all be relied on to shoot somewhere between 45 and 50% on the open threes.
That's a different stat.
Then you can't. Then there's nobody that you can just sort of sag off of. And then you think about, you know, the way that Purdue had to adapt its game plan with Zach Edey. Well, suddenly if you're making Zach Edey defend away from the basket, Zach Edey's not blocking shots, and Purdue's interior defense gets a lot worse.
And he's probably not grabbing a lot of defensive rebounds either, being at 24 feet away. So that could help. Helps you on both sides of things.
You need Clelwer to hit those threes.
Well, sure.
But like that's
– you got to take him to hit him.
And that's – you're not – Clelwer has shot threes. I forget what his exact number was, but he shot like 40 or 50 threes at Oregon last year. He had a three-point shot in high school. It's not a – you're not asking a player to be something he's never been before. It's not like when we started saying, when's Trace going to start shooting threes? Like, no, that's part of his game. That's a big piece of the reason why people thought he was a top 10 player, is because he was going to be able to be one of those modern centers that could be long and athletic. He had great feet. He had great hands. He could rim run. He could pick and roll and all that. But he could also pick and pop. He could also shoot the three. He could also put it on the floor a little bit. And so suddenly, when you start comparing him to, let's not just talk about Zach Edey, Dane Danger at Illinois. Or, Will Cheddar at Michigan. I think Cheddar's still there. I lose,
Right.
Suddenly the guys that he's going to see in college are in this conflict situation where they think, well, he's not going to hit seven threes in a game. But if I don't go out there, if I don't follow him out to that, to that high ball screen, if I play drop coverage and he pops instead of rolling, then he's going to have a shot that he makes 45% of the time. And I can't afford that because, to your point, 45% on three is about equal to 60% on two.
Ding.
Because you're getting an extra point every time it goes in. But then that means that he doesn't even have to be as good of a pick and roll player because his man is forced to come out to the pick and roll. And Indiana's got the quickest point guard in the league. So he gets around the corner, you try to hedge the screen or blitz the screen, and suddenly Xavier Johnson's running at the rim, and you're behind him, and your only options are to foul or to just leave him.
Yeah, because you're not blocking a shot.
Let him have a rebound. Or somebody else has to – or excuse me, a layup. Or somebody else has to slide over, but there's Trey Galloway in the corner. Or somebody slides up, but here comes – McKenzie Mbako for the lob over the top along the baseline. And it's one of those things where we have reduced the idea of, listen, Indiana needs to shoot threes at more volume while still making, I think they were a top 25-ish team by the end of last season in overall percentage. And they were still pretty solid in Big Ten play. They regressed a little bit as the season went on, as you'd expect, but they were still a solid team, maybe top five in the conference in league games. They need to shoot more threes. And by shooting more threes, therefore make more threes. But we have gotten to this place where we have sort of reduced modern basketball to everybody needs to hit threes so you can space the floor, so you can get easy looks at the rim. There are more ways to space the floor than to have four guys around the perimeter that all shoot 35%.
Yes, movement away from the ball, things like that, running opposite.
Creating mismatches.
Actions. Yeah, right.
Putting players in. I mean, like, listen.
Running
ISO.
I'm not
trying to pick on him, and I recognize what it sounds like when the Indiana reporter says this about a Purdue player, but like, why is Zach Edey still in college? He's still in college because he cannot defend space.
And there's defensive 3 seconds in the
NBA. For a big man,
right,
the way that you have to in the modern game.
Watch Jokic play tonight, and that'll tell you what you need to know. Jokic is 7'1".
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, watch the two games against Indiana last year. In Bloomington, they tried dropping everything, and it wasn't working, because Jalen Huccifino had like 10 points in the first half. So they started coming up on everything. And Trayce Jackson-Davis just kept going around him for backside lobs. He had 29 points. So in West Lafayette, they said, we will not allow that. Trayce Jackson-Davis will not beat us. And by the way, Trayce Jackson-Davis was still only like 4 assists and 2 rebounds away from a triple-double. But he had 10, 6, and 8. But lopsiding the entire game plan to say that we are not going to let Trayce Jackson-Davis' athletic advantage in space against Zach Edey beat us, let Jalen Huccifino put together one of the all-time great performances
ever
in the history of that series, and Purdue lost again. And they barely led in the entire second half at home as the eventual Big Ten champion. And so my point is, Indiana didn't make 13 threes in either of those games. Indiana didn't go nuts because they, Indiana didn't start drilling threes and that spaced the floor, and it Purdue's game plan got all torn up and they had to go out and cover shooters they didn't think they'd have to, and that's how Indiana. No, what Indiana did was they were really smart about how they moved off the ball, where they put players, and how they leveraged the advantages they had both over Zach Edey athletically inside and Purdue's young guards.
And that's why they won two games in that series. And
against,
won three
again,
or four.
And I know, you know, people will pick on him, but the eventual Big Ten champion. Yes, look past Fairleigh Dickinson for a second.
Right.
Purdue won the Big Ten, and they won it running away.
Comfortably. And I believe they won the Big Ten tournament championship
yes.
as well for scoring at home.
And they were a number one overall seed. Again, I know what happens in the tournament, but that's one bad night. It should not detract from what it means to beat the team that ultimately is head and shoulders above everybody else in the conference all season long.
Twice.
Twice.
That's good stuff from Zach Osterman.